This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show.
Yeah.
Back in black.
Back in black.
List.
Oh. We did that?
You owe me a Coke. I owe you a Coke.
Yes,
damn.
You do. Back in black list. Welcome. Yeah, oh, you're just getting it now.
No, I got it.
Welcome to the.
I didn't think it
was funny. That's the difference.
Welcome to the AfterBuzz After Show, the Blacklist. We are returned after a long hiatus, and we are so happy to be back. The Olympics are over.
Joe was in Sochi the whole time. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, it's a joke. I'm not going to touch the joke, but never mind. Yeah, Sochi was great. I barely know her. It's my joke. Anyway, he said it. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm your host. I was not in Sochi. I was here in Los Angeles watching the Olympics on television. I'm joined by Joe Sanfilippo.
What's up, everybody?
And also
puberty. Puberty's a mess. That's a rough thing.
Peter Brady. I'm also joined by Julia Kierlin.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. We're back because we're missing Nando Blasquez, who is out on assignment.
Mm.
But he
very
will be back.
Man.
He'll be back next week, Nando Blasquez. He's here in spirit. Episode 14, Madeline Pratt of the Blacklist. And
number 73.
She's number 73.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm already getting some feedback via Twitter and otherwise, and that people weren't that into this episode. My girl Vanilla Cupcake just hit me up, and she's like, I was disappointed with this episode.
Was she?
She was, but here's what I say. I disagree, V Cupcake, because I liked it. I thought this was really cool. I thought they did something really cool with this episode. I've got my criticisms, which we'll get to in a second. But overall, what was cool about this is it was like a good old fashioned sort of con man grifter sort of story. Like, not unlike The Sting, not unlike, you know, David Mamet, House of Games or Heist. Where, you know, you have some con things going on, there's some misdirection, you think that one thing's happening, it's not the other thing, at the end something else happened, and I like that. I like a good sort of grifter con man situation going on.
Well, yeah, did they select this episode? Did they know going in that this was the episode that was going to be the return after Sochi? I mean, I think there's an expectation that kind of happens, like we're going to be gone for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, but when we come back, it's going to be amazing. You know,
I mean, it's hard to say. That's a definite chicken egg me situation.
Chicken egg me.
You know, I'm sure, you know, John Bokenkamp and the gang, they break these stories most of the time in advance. And then they're on their schedule. They shoot them in advance. And then NBC sort of gives them the schedule afterwards. Sometimes they know, sometimes they don't. So who knows if this was a selected episode to come back from break or if this is just
right.
The way the cookie crumbled.
That's it. That's a question.
Yes. I don't know.
Because I mean, I think that builds expectation. Like if it was just a week to week, nobody would probably complain about it. But because it's built up the expectation and maybe it didn't satisfy.
So what did you think of this episode, Joe?
I liked it. I like the idea very much of having Lizzie Keene have more stuff.
Yeah.
Like, did you see his steel shit when you were a kid? That's great. I'm excited to hear that. You didn't learn sleight of hand in at the FBI. Were you in, I don't know what the deal with the ultrasound is. I mean, was she into magic? It's, I don't know. But something. Like, you know, there's kind of something interesting, maybe something criminal about her. I like that.
I got some mixed thoughts about her secret past that we've got revealed now. But, Julia, what did you think of the episode?
I could sort of take or leave this episode. There were some moments that I really enjoyed. I do like the new revelations or the possibility possibility, I guess, of what went down in Lizzie's past. That was kind of cool,
right?
Because she's such like an anomaly. I have no concept of who she is as a person. And so I'm looking forward to delving into her past. I mean, 14 episodes in, I want to know a little something, finally.
Yeah, give me something to chew on.
Mm-hmm. The story, I mean, I liked our blacklister of the week. I liked her a lot, actually. She wasn't one of
Madeline
these.
Madeline Pratt.
Madeline Pratt. I liked her a lot. I liked her swagger. I liked the way that she rolled. I liked her relationship with Red a lot, and what she brought out of him, which was new and interesting. Oh, maybe I liked this episode more than I thought. But the actual story, it was a little convoluted and muddy for me. We got some Russians. We got some Syrians. We have an effigy. We have a double cross. It's like, okay.
Right.
Okay. Make me follow all these things.
It's so exhausting to actually follow a plot line.
To passively watch television can be absolutely exhausting.
I don't know. I'm more invested in the character development, and that's just the way I enjoy television and enjoy shows like this than a new heist of the week or whatever. That's just me.
Well, there has to be a heist of the week. Yeah. Otherwise, the character development goes nowhere.
No, but it just, yeah, I know. I know.
At the heart,
intellectually, we recognize this. All right.
Right. So I think at the heart of The Blacklist is a procedural. We talked about this all the time. It's a procedural at the heart of it. It's a crime of the week, a blacklister of the week. They're doing something. We have something to chase and follow and clues and solve every week. And then underneath that, we have our sort of, you know, mildly serialized thing that's going to take us through maybe multiple seasons. So we get both.
No, I get it. I guess I just didn't love this crime of the week, right. I guess. Maybe is what it is.
Right. I get it. But I like what they're trying to do, because I really feel like they're trying to do a sort of like, again, like a sort of a grifters, sort of, you know, double crossy, you know, con man story. And, you know, and in the end, Red double crossed and he just wanted the thing. And then she got her thing. And then it was, you know, I like that. That was fun.
I got you.
Okay.
I liked it too.
All right. Well, what do we learn? Let's get into this episode. When we first start, we see, you know, Madeline Pratt, a.k.a. Madeline Reddington.
Mrs. Reddington. the widow Reddington, as far as the Turks are concerned.
Yeah, she's very broken up too. Yes. She's in the bank.
Oh,
you know.
I can't muster awesome. A tear, but I'm very sad.
No, she's dabbing her face, and she's got the black gloves and the whole thing. But
she's
I do love
right.
the level of zeal and joy she had doing that. Like when she opened the box with this really great smile, mm-hmm. and then when she disappeared and they were chasing after her, she put on the scarf.
The scarf, yeah.
She had a smile like, ha, 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 ha. And I'm like, I like this broad.
I liked her a lot.
Yeah.
Jennifer L? Is that how you say it? Eel?
Yes.
L?
I don't know,
but she was awesome.
She's great.
Yeah, I like that she was Reddington's age. Like, she's a really hot lady who's not, she's not 26, she's not 28. She's a really attractive lady who's got some sophistication.
Sure.
And she got some stuff.
And I like that she's still out there in the end. So I would love to see her come back at some point.
Yeah, I like her.
I mean, I like her.
I love her.
I love her more. That's the game we can play now.
Boys, don't fight.
Yeah, but you know, she's kind of like, you know, people say that she looks like, she's English, and she looks a lot like Meryl Streep in some ways. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that or heard that line, but anyway, that's a separate thing.
All right.
People like her. I like her. Anywho,
we
see her do her thing, and then she leaves a note for Red. Red's in the middle of getting his acupuncture.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. Acupressure.
Acupuncture.
Yeah, and he was just about to. He was feeling the euphoric
endorphins were starting to
vibrate his spleen, which is just a great Red Reddington note there. Mm-hmm. So he realized he meets her. I love that. This is why I love this episode, because I do love, like you said, Julia, what we learn about Red. Like the function of these blacklisters is, aside from being the criminal of the week a lot of time, is to give us the ability to learn more about Red. With every blacklister, we learn more about Red, you know. So with this one, Madeline, we get to see a different side of Red, because we get to know about what happened in
Florence.
Didn't happen in Florence.
We get to know that there's some romance going on. If we have something more to talk about, maybe we should take this up to your room.
Well, you definitely got the impression by the end of it that the reason he didn't show in Florence was not because there was a little something-something going on, because a little something-something could have morphed into a lot of something-something, and that would have been too much for him. He's not prepared to go there anymore. He won't go there anymore.
Right.
Ever since Christmas, whatever year that was.
If you think that story was true.
Well, let's get back to that. Let's
we'll get there. I bought it.
I bought it too, but we'll get there in a second. So we do the initial exchange, and we have the offer to for you know the offer, which is Red to steal something. But as always, Red is Red's sort of three steps ahead. So when he brings us to Lizzie, it's almost like I have an agenda with Madeline Pratt, but to get to my agenda, which will probably ultimately get the effigy to myself,
of Estrada.
His end game is I want this effigy, but I want to get the effigy and see what Madeline's up to. So who do I call? I call the FBI and Lizzie, and I'll get them to jump through all of my hoops. So at the end of the day, I can put this thing on my mantle.
That's what I want to find out at the end of this thing. Why did he want it? He didn't want the bombs. He didn't care about that. He got rid of that ugly painting. He gave that to Madeline at the end. Why did he want the damn thing?
It's a priceless artifact, and it's something that is to have. And this is kind of the piece of Red Reddington. There's this myth about these art thieves or these jewel thieves or like these guys who go out and the cat burglar who goes out and steals this wonderful, beautiful, multi-million-dollar art piece and then takes it and just hangs it in their room. Or people who go out and have those things stolen just so they can have them in their study. Like, there's no reason for it. Some people just want a beautiful piece of unobtainable art in their possession. And Red seems like that kind of cat to me. I mean,
well, when you have a guy who has everything already,
right?
He has everything at his fingertips.
Maybe. I mean, he just sat there and looked at it. Like, it's like he won.
Well, we didn't talk about the morning show there at Liz and Tom's house.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah, I know. Tom has turned into a more milksop version of Owen Wilson at this point in the show.
Luke Wilson.
I beg your pardon. But I don't know. If he's not a spy, there's nothing underhanded about him. He needs to leave her. He needs to get the heck out. I don't know, man. She says, I'm sorry in the morning when he says, 6 months planning, then a year waiting. And I'm sorry. Did you think she was sorry?
No.
I didn't think she was sorry either. It's kind of like, yeah, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to have my orange juice. Where are you going? You're leaving. You seem mad.
I'm pretty sure that every episode we now have Tom and Lizzie making up, then they make plans, and then she calls and cancels. Every single episode.
If she were a dude.
How long do you let this go on before you're like, okay, bye-bye?
If she were a dude, it would have been done a long time ago. We'd have all been like, girl, get out. But you know.
Who would say that?
I just did. That's what I just said.
Do you start sentences often with girl? No,
all the time.
Say. Girl.
Girl.
I want a sip of coffee.
Get out. That's what I'm saying. If this was flipped, if Lizzie was a guy and Tom was a girl, we'd have all been like, get out. You're done.
I mean, I don't really see what she has to offer to this relationship.
Yeah.
Whole lot of nothing.
I don't know. I'm so bored with the Tom and Lizzie storyline. Frankly.
It's become so uninteresting.
I'm just bored. I mean, I guess it's a device to get us, as we see in the previews next week, to get us to this place where we need to go with this mysterious woman. What's her name?
Jolene.
Who is
Brooks.
Right.
Jolene
Lucy Brooks, who's apparently the super spy we've been waiting for. But and we'll get to her next week as we see. But in order to get to there, we have to have some sort of, they've been on the rocks since day one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tom. So, and then Red's been putting doubt into Lizzie about Tom since day one. And so, I don't know. I'm more interested in seeing what Tom's up to or not up to than I am with the ins and outs of their relationship. It's just every time we cut to the apartment and Tom's like making eggs and he's doing whatever he's doing and I'm just bored. I don't know.
That's I used to look forward to it.
Yeah.
Those used to be my favorite scenes.
I don't want to wait.
All right.
I remember.
I remember that too.
The other thing about Tom, dude, I don't know. I've not been married to a teacher before, but he goes to an amazing number of. He travels a ton for a teacher.
He's
got a conference in Orlando. He's got going to Nebraska the week before that. He's out all the time. There's a lot of traveling that goes on in teaching that I didn't know about.
Well, he's got to go do his job as an assassin.
That's right. He's an assassin.
He's got to go kill people. That's
the most unsuave assassin. And if you remember, I was really into the Tom in the beginning.
I remember.
But he's just so, he's so wet noodly.
Milk toasty.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah, milk toast on.
He does. He makes Luke Wilson look edgy.
All right. Shots fired at Luke Wilson. What do you got with Luke Wilson?
I like Luke Wilson.
Right.
I wouldn't put Luke Wilson on a Harley with a leather jacket on ride him through the desert, though.
Fair enough. So then, okay, so I don't know.
Okay,
all right, that's very specific, but I wouldn't do it.
So, we get back to that. That happens. So we get back to the FBI command center when we're getting the full debriefing from Red and Harold and the gang. And this is when he sort of, Harold has that one-on-one face-to-face with Red because, Harold Lennox is not, he knows something's up, right? He knows that something is not right in Denmark with the disappearance of.
Where's Diane?
Where's Diane?
Where's Diane Nairobi?
Yes, I will put you in a box. So he meant it. So he's not happy. He knows something is up, and Red is very coy. What's so funny? Like, I don't know. Red is very coy, I like the notion that he shows up and he's like, wait, what are you doing here? You have to those mole. No, we're good. And he's like, what do you mean we're good? Where's Diane? I don't know.
Diane. That's not my problem. She's your problem, not my problem.
And Harold, wait a second.
Damn it, Nairobi.
Nairobi. No, so there's something not right. And then this is where it gets a little murky for me, because then it's revealed, Red reveals his plan, as he always does. This is what we have to do. We have Madeline Pratt, and she wants this, and she wants to, and she's planning this heist. And if we want this, she asked me to help her, so we can do that. And guess who we have who can help us? Lizzie.
Yeah, and everyone takes for granted, because Red said so, that Lizzie is a master thief. Now, this is to me, FBI WTF. So Red says that Lizzie's a master thief, and Lizzie goes, what? Long, confused look at the camera. Okay, so, and now we'll plan a whole operation based on Lizzie being a master thief in the Syrian embassy, which is technically... foreign soil. And I love the idea. Harold's, whoa, it's foreign soil. We can't protect you. Okay, yeah, really? I mean, do we really?
Sure. Yeah,
I know it's true. I know legally it's true, but really? Right. But it's interesting to me. I don't know. It does stretch the imagination that the FBI doesn't have anybody else to send.
You're bearing the lead. Yeah, you're bearing the lead. I'm still stuck on the fact that Lizzie's a master thief. Forget the fact that they're going to send her in. Like, when did Lizzie become a master thief? Like, when that we get episode 14, and that's something that's a reveal.
Or that when you explain to the person you're auditioning for master thief job when you say I've stolen your phone and you say I ran a scam at a 7-Eleven, and she goes, that works for me. I will help you break into the Syrian embassy.
Exactly. So yeah. You stole
from the 7-Eleven,
and
you took my phone
in an alley for a little bit.
Done. Right. In and out of the Syrian embassy.
Yeah. Like
done.
That's, okay.
But let's
back up, because we'll get to that. Let's back up. I want to back up to where, wrestlers like. So wait a minute.
Your father's criminal record never showed up.
And maybe yours didn't show up. Is it because you didn't tell us, or because you never got caught?
Yes.
I don't know. I didn't buy any of that.
No follow-up wrestler? Just yes. Okay,
and
bye-bye.
This is not a shot at Megan Boone, who I love, and it's not a shot at Lizzie Keene, the character, who I also love, but I wasn't buying the fact that she's like, I'm a master thief. I'm a grifter.
What's up now?
How did you know? Anyway, yeah, so let's get, so they buy it, and let's just suspend disbelief for a second. Harold's like, all right, you're a thief. It's
all right,
on you,
Nairobi.
But we can't protect you. Okay, let's suspend disbelief. And that happened. That's cool. So you're right. She gets to the audition with Madeline, and Red's like, tell her about...
Frank in Omaha.
Tell her about Omaha. She says, well, there was a 7-Eleven. really?
That's Thursday.
And then she played, and I love that, I'm not trying to be nasty, but you guys wrote this goofy. So she drops the Omaha 7-Eleven action, and then she goes, you know what? I'm out. And then she leaves. from my point of view, it's like, I want to buy that Chevy for $20. That's right. My deal. I'm out.
I don't think the Omaha story was as impressive, because Red was like, Red threw it out there like, it was like she broke into Fort Knox. She's
right.
Like,
yeah.
Tell her about Omaha.
Boom.
Boom. I'm looking at, check it out. And she's like, yeah, the 7-Eleven happened. Then you know what I did? I seduced him a little bit and took him in the alley. And then
kissed him off.
Kissed him off. And, well, the rest is history. And she's like, I'm not buying it. So the key to the thing that got her was she stole her phone. She walked out. And so she's like, okay, I'll double. I'll pay you double.
What? Yeah, I don't know.
Obviously, also, I don't think she really cared how great this possible thief could be being Lizzie. She just needed Red to be there.
Of course. And look, just to get back, for plot purposes, we'll stop deconstructing it because it's dumb. And Joe, you couldn't have written a better episode yourself. So quit.
Don't act like I'm the only one who's questioning it. A-hole.
You can't take shots at the writers.
Yeah, like you didn't just take a shot. You put the whole thing on me.
I did. I'm just saying.
What a jerk, Flippo.
I didn't say it out loud.
Oh, I hate you both. I agree. And the device is,
the device is
it does work because Madeline didn't actually expect them to steal it. She was just auditioning patsies.
Right. Auditioning patsies. And number two, we are to believe that Red's credible. So if Red says, this is the girl, it's the girl. Like 7-Eleven, no 7-Eleven, that's it. And she didn't want him anyway. She just wanted patsies. And that's all fine. And that'll happen. So, and that was cool. This is part of that whole sort of like, you know, House of Games, you know, sting, double cross, grifting thing. But I do like Megan's like, I did some grifting in my day. I'm a grifter. I like that.
When did you have time?
You know what? Lizzie's getting hotter. She's an FBI agent. She's a profiler and a grifter.
Who knew?
It's hot. So we get to the actual showdown. She puts on that beautiful dress, mm-hmm. from the actual heist. We're all in. The whole team's in place, and Red shows up in the cool tuxedo, right?
Looking suave.
Well, you know, I do want to say Tom actually made me laugh because there was when he goes to zip her up, and he says, you know, you're going undercover. I could come out. I can come with you. I got a lot of great fake IDs.
Oh yeah,
that was pretty funny.
I thought that was funny.
But Julia, like, tell me, Julia. I again. No heat, no sparks,
zero.
No sexuality.
Zero.
There was nothing happening there. I mean, Megan Boone, Tom, sorry, Lizzie Keene is hot. She's in the dress. You know, Tom's a great looking guy. He's in the dress and he says, maybe we should do some undercover work of our own. And I'm like, ugh. I mean, were you involved?
I got nothing. Not a tingle.
Not
a twinge.
Nothing. I was like, there's no heat. Heat index was zero on that. Like, I don't, these, this is the most unlikely couple.
I hate them.
All right.
Just divorce.
So you're telling me if in the next episode the ground opened up, randomly swallowed Tommy, you'd be like, oh, darn. Yes.
I could be okay with it.
I do like you. I'm totally proud of you. I do like your winning. And, you know, frankly, Ryan Engel, again, no disrespect to you.
No, super cute. No, Tom.
And no,
love Ryan.
Tom
hate
King
Tom.
Is bugging the crap out of me. And the Tom Lizzie thing is bugging me. But, I just, you know, I want some... There's no chemistry.
Want some heat. You know, you want something to fight for.
Although next week, it looks like Tom may have some heat.
Well, that's
Jolene.
Something to fight for.
Yeah.
No, that looks like some
heat. Something going on.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Me too. Even though she's a six.
I think it's a good call. I think it's a good call. I think that's legit. You could have cast a ridiculous bombshell and it would have looked silly. But she's a six, seven.
Hot.
And I think it works.
Don't try to bump her up to a seven.
I said six to seven. That's what I said. She'll be a 14 by the end of this thing.
I like Jolene already. I think she's more than a six, but that's we digress as usual. So we have the heist. Red shows up in a very sweet, touching moment when he says, you know, I will not let anything happen to you. And those are great moments.
Have any backup. You got me.
Yes. Those are great Spader moments that we know and love. I mean, you know, so again, to him. So once we get to the actual centerpiece, the whole set piece of the, the first cool thing is they have to steal the badge, which I thought was kind of a cool scene. Or no?
Yes. The brush pass comes before. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was neat.
Yeah. The brush pass, you know.
Getting the badge?
Yeah. El brush pass. As they say in the
business. Yeah. Or as they say in the business.
Yeah.
The brush pass. So that was cool to see the team working together as that.
Yep.
I mean, you know, nothing on that, Joe?
You know, it's a smooth operation.
All right.
It's also hinting a little bit more at her criminal past of how easy it is for her just to, like, a little bump and steal a patch
pa-tunk.
And then bump again.
Pa-tunk.
Right.
He never was the wiser.
I didn't even know. That's the sound.
Because she's that good of a grifter.
Pa-tunk. That's the sound right there. Pa-tunk. That's the sound a brush pass makes.
I don't think I want to hear that sound anymore.
I'm going to do it again.
Don't. All right. So we get to the...
Pa-tunk. Check your earring. It's gone.
Sorry. So we get to the actual party. We see that to everyone's surprise, we know that Madeline's there and Red is there, and they both seem very surprised, but they both are actually not surprised at all.
Yeah.
Right. And so Lizzie goes off to do her thing.
Mm-hmm.
Red distracts Madeline, and what happens?
and the alarm sounds. And Red realizes that this was all a hoax, you know?
Right.
And she, Madeline Pratt, gets taken away to the safe house, which we learn is where she wanted to be the entire time because that's where the effigy is.
Right.
And now she takes this moment with all the commotion to point out that there's Red,
right,
as the patsy of this whole thing. Right. There's Red. It's his fault. Follow him. Swipe, swipe. Yeah. Run. Sell it to the Russians.
No, you guys are like, you guys don't think that's cool. I do like, I like all this sort of double cross.
No, I dig it.
No, I like that.
I like all this stuff.
I didn't see it coming.
Misdirection, and then you think this, and you think that.
I didn't feel like there was any. Maybe it's the way they shot it, or maybe it's because we've gotten used to Red being, you know, the smartest guy in the room, and you know, he's always got a plan. But I didn't feel any sense of danger. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel any true sense of imminent danger. And that's maybe, you know, that's maybe what I felt was missing from the episode. I didn't feel like when they were in the Syrian embassy, I didn't really feel like they were in any real danger. Right. At any point, even when she's captured and Red comes in and does the whole pantomime to get the, you know, he's like, oh, I'm yelling about this whole thing, and then he knocks the guy. I never felt.
What does he do?
He comes in and he's
the gay guy.
Right, and I never felt like there was any. I never felt any sense of danger. I never felt like there was the stakes were very high.
So are you saying this as a criticism of the episode? Or
I think that's why.
As the embassy as a set piece, or are you just saying like?
I think overall the tone wasn't particularly. Didn't feel dangerous. The pacing didn't feel dangerous.
Right.
And the Syrians frankly didn't feel dangerous.
Right.
So I think that kind of lessened that. I think that's why people are responding kind of negatively to the episode because the stakes didn't feel high enough.
Well, it's like there was a certain tone. I mean, to me, again, there was a certain kind of fun, upbeat tone to this episode, which didn't necessarily match what were the stakes, right?
Yeah.
So I think that we're feeling this like, oh, this he's tangling with Madeline, and then there's this and that. There's all this stuff going on. But the stakes were really high, but we don't really sense that.
That's felt kind of like a 60s James Bond movie. Like, you know, everything's all about, you know, it was all about swagger and style, but not so much about real danger. It didn't feel that dangerous.
But I think that was that feels to me like that was a stylistic choice.
This
episode was specifically meant to be a certain type of episode. I think it was an attempt, you know, I'll say for the 100th time, an attempt to do something different, do something like The Sting or something like one of these grifter movies. So I think that the tone was, you know, sort of fast paced, you know, misdirection, you know, you never know who to trust sort of thing, and it's a double cross, and never double cross, and it's a twist. I think that, like, that was sort of the tone of the episode, but it does not match with the dread and or danger that you may feel in any given situation. I do. That's a good point.
Yeah. And the, you know, one thing I do want to point out that I liked, you know, when Red is dancing with Madeline, he's trying to give her a way out. My plane's 15 minutes away. Let's just go.
Yeah.
Let's just go. We'll get this done. We'll get out of here.
So do you think in that moment or in general that Red, and this is a question for both of you, I mean, you know, do you think that Red has some genuine affection for Madeline and he genuinely cared about her? Was he really, like, trying to help her out because he knew, or was he still sort of manipulating the situation, trying to get her out of there because he knew that she's here there to steal something?
I think in that moment, I think it was a genuine affection thing. You know, I think he really has real feelings towards this woman. I mean, she revealed when, I mean, she's obviously heartbroken over the whole Florence thing.
Right.
Never showed in Florence. And that's sort of her.
Yeah, she brought that up like four times.
Yeah, she keeps on saying it. And maybe that's probably why she picked Red in the first place.
Yeah.
It's a little revenge action over there.
Always, this is my weekly question. You know, this is part of the show where I ask the same question. Did they do it like at the beginning of the show when he took her up at the hotel when he's like, let's take this up to your room?
I think so.
I think they did it.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I
not,
think
yeah.
so.
I mean, well, I would think so.
All right. Okay. Sorry.
And you
I'm
know
just
what?
Curious.
Something she said when she was asking.
I just like to know
Florence.
People did it.
do you think they did it?
Did they do it?
Did they do it?
All right. Go ahead.
They totally did it.
All right. Thanks. Go ahead.
When she's talking about Florence, she says this was our ticket out. So I think that she envisioned an entire future with Red, you know, rolling around in their mountains of cash, some remote islands,
appreciating beautiful art and the Florentine lifestyle.
Exactly, right. And just getting out of this completely. And when he left her high and dry, well, then he's gonna pay.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. And then what she said. So,
I think his affection still remains.
Right.
For both of them.
So we get the we get the double cross. We get everything happen. We get back to
yeah. And by the way, they break out of the embassy, and apparently we never see that. We never see them break out. Yeah. We never see them get out through the crackerjack Syrian security.
This is one of those. That's one of those. You know, I mean, you know,
that's what I'm saying. The stakes didn't feel very high.
We're suspending a lot of disbelief here because you know we got getting in, and we got all this talk about this is you're off. You know, you're on foreign territory. This is really dangerous. This is bad. And Lizzie was tied up, and you know, Red did go in, but then next thing we see is we cut to Lizzie's back at headquarters.
Right. And I think that
she's like, that was weird.
Remember what happened? Yeah, when we broke out and we killed all those guys. That was amazing. Anyway.
Right? Remember that time?
You know? Then you stole the jet and we flew over to New York. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, what I think, I feel like they kind of did this themselves in a lot of ways because they had such an amazing last two episodes before the break, and it was gritty and there was high stakes everywhere and people were getting killed and, you know, we had a lot going on. And then when you kind of bring it back to a slower place, I think I understand because you can't run on that high octane forever. It'll burn everybody out. But this is going to be the natural letdown. I think.
I still maintain that I enjoyed this episode, so I'm just going to maintain that. But I will say that I was talking to some staff writers, and this is what people will say before. And people often talk about showrunners and staff writers always talk about everyone prefers doing 13 over 22. Like 22 episodes of story is a lot of story. The network requires 22, but sometimes they'll let you 13. But, you know, sometimes they'll let you 15 or 18, but 22 is a lot, right? So, and what they say is, you know, when you do 22, you'll often notice that five of them suck.
Yeah, you got to dilute the story so much.
So, there's, you know, or five of them usually probably suck. And I'm not saying this is one of the ones that suck, but anyway, so good. So we get back to headquarters. We see, Harold's very suspicious of Red. But Red has a plan, Julia. What is this? What takes place next?
Oh, why do you keep on calling on me like that?
I don't know. I'm talking.
I know all about it.
you should, because we do a show called The Blacklist. Julia, please.
Well, Red, Joe, and Joe runs into...
Why do you keep calling on me? Sorry. Julia, continue.
He runs into Madeline on the street, and they get tased. Right.
Well. First we find out about the CIA raid from 1983, and we find out
Was I wrong?
No, you were put under pressure. It's his fault, not yours.
I'll go to Joe. Joe.
We find out that the crewman six that we're trying to find. That is supposed to be hidden in the effigy. Right. We find out that that's not actually spies. Those are nuclear bombs. We find that out. And there was a 1983 CIA raid that was sent over to this guy's dad's compound. And this kid at 7 years old was given the effigy and told to protect it. And so he said there was nothing in it, or he never opened it, maybe, but he saw his dad put something in it. So we know it's very important, whatever it is, right? So that's we find out that the effigy. Now we raise the stakes. So the effigy actually has nuclear bomb coordinates. So now it's a big deal. So we got these suitcase nuclear bombs that have a 2,000-foot blast radius, and there's going to be fallout. The RA-115 suitcase nukes that the Russians.
Oh, yes,
oh, he's got
specs and everything.
I'm saying. I'm not playing. So the Russians stashed all over the country in the 60s. So that's what we find out is in the actual effigy. So now we've raised the stakes. So now we've got, oh, this is serious. Now Red and Madeline meet on the street, and Madeline is still pissed about Florence. Yes. And then they're captured.
They're captured, which is a cool moment. This is back to my, you know, double cross thing, grifter, House of Games heist moment where this is another, you know, sort of a double crossed, twisty set piece. So they're taken to this location, mm-hmm. and Red goes into one of his Red or James Spader wonderful soliloquies or wonderful James Spader monologue where he sucks you all the way in. And, you know, dude, broke my heart.
Like, it was good, huh?
It was good.
Spader can, in the middle of this episode, in the middle of this questionable episode that a lot of things are happening and, you know, Megan's a grifter and Tom's, you know, doing his thing and, you know, and Harold's yelling. Like, in the middle of this, James does a beautiful piece of acting as he always does, which is why the show's so freaking good.
Let me say this. Beautifully staged and shot, I thought.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
His face was, I literally wrote down beautiful. Like, his the way that they lit him was gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, half and half not. Everything was on his face, the stillness. Yep. It was beautifully done. I really enjoyed it. What do you say? So he ran out of gas 4 or 5 miles from home. Wife and daughter. All he can think about is his wife and daughter at home. She's playing the daughter playing the piano. He's got a car full of gifts. He's ruining Christmas, and how he's thinking that how they're going to laugh about this for years to come. How Dad ruined Christmas. And he gets home, and all I can see is the blood. All I saw is their blood. I can still smell the nape of her neck, feel her tiny fingers. As a dad, that grabbed you, didn't it?
No, it broke my heart. It really did. I was really into that scene. I don't know. I mean, Jules, did how did you feel?
I'm not a dad, and I was still feeling it.
Yeah.
It also solidified the emotional connection between the two of them.
Sure.
Which has been sort of, you know, fun and loose and fancy free, but this made it extremely credible that they have like very, very solid and serious past, the two of them.
And it was kind of, it was a bit of a one-upsmanship moment by Red, because she's like, what about Florence? What about Florence? He's like, let me tell you why I wasn't in Florence. My whole family got killed. She's like, oh. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, I guess you win the argument. So that was kind of a bummer. But let me get to the real question here is, do we believe him, Julia?
I mean, I do. We know that his family is, well, we don't know for sure. We know his daughter's dead. No, we don't know for sure. We know something happened to the family
in such a way that
he had to blow up the house in which he raised his child or children.
We do know that.
Yes. So, I mean, shit went down.
Yes.
So this was, I'm choosing to believe it because it was just so good.
Sure.
The speech was just so good and it made so much sense. It was nice to have a delving look into this man finally and this character and why he is who he is. So I am choosing to believe it.
Good. Flippo?
I believe it too. And I just want to go on the record as having said, I knew it was a setup. I knew it was a setup from where I just want to let y'all know.
La-dee-da.
You people.
Mr. I see into the future. I know
I'm
everything.
Just,
teacher's pet. Let
I'm
me
just
pull
letting
out
y'all know.
My stats.
All right.
Listen, if I was in the presence of genius, I'd want to know too. So I'm just letting y'all know.
We're on notice.
In the presence of genius.
Thank you.
That's all I'm saying. When he came out in the suit, was not surprising to me. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Okay. I was surprised.
I was surprised.
Were you?
Yeah.
Like Red was going to let himself get captured in the street. Please.
All right. Okay.
Come on.
All right. Well,
he said with disdain.
Well, the Syrians had already had such shoddy security.
Yeah, right, by the Syrians.
Own,
so we've already
their own
proven.
Embassy.
Right. They can't even keep people in their own building.
They were much scarier in a.
What happened? Where'd
the
they go? I don't know. It's crazy.
Yes.
My terrible Syrian accent.
Please, don't ever do it again.
No?
I don't know what that accent
is. It was generic, awful Middle Eastern. But that's where Syria technically is.
Sure. Sure.
So, and having never met a Syrian, I would imagine.
Wait.
Where is Syria? Generic Middle East.
Generic Middle East.
Jules, you did say they were a lot more scary in Back to the Future.
Yes, I did.
Which that was a good line. I want to make sure that we heard that. I want Joe like stepping on that with all of his bad accents and preening and showing off.
That's much better.
Anyway, so
thanks, Brett.
There you go. I got you covered. I'm looking, I'm looking out
better.
For you. So it was a setup. I do believe every word of that. I do believe that was all true. I mean, the specificity of that, him, in that moment, he made me believe him. And I don't think that, to walk through those exact moments, the smell, the look, the thoughts, and when you walk through something point by point by point, obviously that's what makes you believe something, but we know something happened. I think that, it just says more to me about Red's ability to be able to use and pull from all these different things to be able to get what he wants. And furthermore, it also further solidifies for me his affection for Madeline. I mean, he needed to get what he needed to get, but they had a genuine rift in Florence. Like, she genuinely was like, what happened? So he owed her an explanation. He gave her the explanation.
Yeah.
But in the process, he also used her to get the his information he needed. But I think it was sort of a two-for him. He was able to, connect with her and also use her.
Well, if you set something like that up, right, then there's a bunch of different ways you can go about doing it. You could be nasty to her. You could torture her. You could abuse her. But he didn't do that, obviously.
Well, right. he meant her no harm.
I think you're right. And then at the end, he doesn't give her up. He doesn't give her to the feds. He lets her get away.
Of course.
With a $40 million painting.
Yes, it was a trade.
And that speech
that
was very...
Painting.
Yeah, it really is kind of creepy.
That
speech was reminiscent of the speech he gave to Wrestler when Wrestler was quasi-dying in the box.
Uh-huh.
Talking about all the places he's seen and the reflections that that meant so much to him. And,
beautiful.
You know, when he talks like that, he's speaking from truth. He's speaking...
I think so.
Yeah.
You like to believe.
I believe it.
You say as a person who's seduced by Red.
I'm very seduced by Red.
Me too. I believe.
You know who I'm not seduced by? Tom.
Tom. I got it.
Well, one thing we didn't talk about is our boy Tom has decided to bone out to Florida without Lizzie. Remember, mm-hmm. they planned a little vacay.
Oh, he's going to bone out in Florida. Right?
You know what I'm saying?
there's a lot of,
and I think what was the deal? Lizzie was in the elevator with wrestler.
Yeah,
and
Tom?
your Tom. Hey, you know, Jesus. And he's like, you know, I was so glad when he did it. I was like, you go, Tom. Yeah. Instead of you go, girl. Yeah. I said, you go, Tom. It's your damn drink. Your go, girl. That's what screwed me up.
You're supposed to start with girl.
Girl. Tom. So anyway, I was like, good, get out, right. you know.
I'm
leaving tonight.
Take a stand, Tom.
Was there any doubt in anyone's mind? The very second Tom said, you know, I'm going to Orlando. You should come out with me. And when Lizzie goes, I'd love that. Was there any doubt?
No, yeah. No question.
She was not going to make it.
Sure. You know what I said? Do you think he believed it?
I mean, well, of course he did in the moment.
Oh,
but
did
like,
you?
I did, but like, I don't think anyone watching that show or knows anything about The Blacklist or anything thought for 1 second. She's like, I'd love to go to Orlando and spend some time with you. We're like, eh. That's
you know, anytime they plan something, I yell at the TV to say, buy travel insurance, Tom. Pay the extra $15. Get the travel insurance because she ain't going.
She ain't going. You know she ain't going.
And well, so, you know there's a part of him that knows Jolene is going to be there, so maybe it was an empty invitation knowing that she was going to back out like she always does.
Well, that's why he had it locked and loaded. We're like, I'm going tonight. Jolene's landing right now. I got to go. You know, so I don't know.
I
so he did his due diligence by inviting her, knowing that she wouldn't follow through.
Okay, maybe.
Makes him look like a good husband.
So that brings us to the elevator with Wrestler and Lizzie. And I just only brought up the fact that I didn't believe for 1 second, none of us did, that she was going to make on that trip. To say it kind of lowered the stakes in that elevator conversation when she's like, Tom, guess what? And, you know, she's upset. I think that was actually very well acted scene by Megan Boone, because she was genuinely like, you know,
But then she says, I hate this job. I was like, really? Then quit.
Well,
you don't hate it.
She's got a higher calling, yeah. But you know who's there to pick up the pieces? Who's there? Mm-hmm. Like
Wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestler.
And he's like giving he's got now his charm. There's some heat there.
I'm liking Wrestler a little bit more these days.
He's building
up in my esteem.
Well, you want me to kick his ass? Want me to rough him up?
Yeah. I'm gonna rough him up a little bit for you.
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
Yeah, Wrestler, I do.
Please.
So that was nice, and that was a nice little moment. I kind of like that. And that's, you know, also who doesn't know for a fact that Wrestler and Lizzie are going to be together sometime. I think I called that in episode 4. But
if not before.
The worst case. That's the worst, easiest prediction in the world. But anyway, so there's that. That happened. We do see the resolution. We see the resolution with when we see that, as we talked about in the beginning. Red has the effigy. You know, he let Madeline get away. The double cross was had. He trades the codes to Harold, and all is well. Everybody is sort of gets what they
right.
want, and it all seems well in Denmark. But I will go back to that weird moment. I mean, I mentioned a few shows ago how we've created this world now where Red has something on everybody. Like, you know, like he really has. He has a task force, like the entire task force in the palm of his hand. And the only person he didn't have anything on, he killed. You know, what's her name? The one he killed last episode.
Diane.
So, but he had something on her too, obviously, and she was the mole, and he killed her. So there was that one moment where he walks into Harold's office, and he goes, how are they? You know, the kids and the... That was kind of a chilling moment for me.
A little sinister. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something about like, how's your family? I'm really like, that was a little sinister.
I know where you live.
Exactly.
Yes.
Not your wife, the kids. And that was something really, there's something sinister about that. So cut to the end. Everything seems well. We do have this moment where Harold wants to know more. He has this vendetta against Reddy. He makes it very clear to Mira Malik. He wants to keep an eye on Reddington, and as if she's access to him, though, but I don't know.
Well, she was there because of Diane, right? Mm-hmm. Diane is the one who put Mira on this task force.
But she was cleared immediately, remember? You're cleared.
You're cleared. Yeah. And do keep in mind that she's the one who gives up Diane.
Yeah, so she knows. She's in a tough spot because she knows what Red has done.
Yes.
And now Red has something on her.
Right.
And now she's being tasked by Harold to look into this.
Right. Well, that means nothing because at the end of the
Special
episode...
Special Agent Walter Gary Martin from the D.C.
Bureau.
The D.C. Bureau.
You need to stop.
Yes. It was very...
He felt like old school J. Edgar Hoover FBI.
He did.
Didn't he?
Yeah, he also felt, felt a little bit like... speaking of Mammoth, he also felt a little bit like Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glenn Ross with his references to downtown, to Mitch and Murray. Like, I'll take this to the Bureau. This is the Bureau, the DC Bureau. It reminded me of when Alec Baldwin was like... I'm from Mitch and Murray. I'm from downtown. I'm the shit. You know, that's kind of like how he rolled. It was
my
funny.
Watch is worth more than you make in a year.
he kind of rolled in there with the swag of like...
Is that what Gary Martin just said to Gary?
He rolled in there with the swag of like, yeah, it's a nice office. You guys doing a good job here. You know, everything you're doing is great. But here's the thing. It's over.
Yeah. Like, this investigation is done.
I'm from downtown. I'm from the D.C. Bureau.
The Diane Fowler disappearance needs to be handled carefully.
Right. So what are our thoughts on this guy? Is this guy on the up and up? Is he working for Alan Alda? Is this a thing? Is it just D.C. putting a lid on stuff? What's happening?
Let me answer your question with a question.
Yes.
I'm not sure how the FBI works, as I've never been a member of the FBI.
Sure.
And they won't return my calls.
Yeah, clearly.
But here's what I don't understand. I thought there would probably be paperwork that people would probably make phone calls and there would be a chain of command. I didn't know that someone would just come into your office and say, hey, here's who I am, and you're going to shut this thing down.
All right, but he knew. I mean,
he said level 4 protocol thing, stop. I don't know. But I mean, like, is that how it works?
That's when you're operating on the up and up. They're obviously not operating on the up and up. They're doing something a little...
Yeah, okay.
But are you suggesting that he just walked into the secure, you know, FBI headquarters and was like, hey, I'm who I say I am?
No, but I'm saying...
Obviously, he knew who the guy was.
Okay, well, let me toss out an idea. What if, you know, we've got Alan Alda's little cadre of guys. You know, what if we've got two separate, you know, kind of, I don't want to say rogue, that's not what I mean, but two separate... chunks of the FBI that are kind of operating outside the chain of command, and it seems like that's kind of what we've got here.
Well, this goes beyond the FBI, right? This is we're talking about the federal. This is a federal. I mean, the FBI is basically the government's police force.
Right.
So, but there's got to be a chief of police, and that's the director of the FBI. But then they have his boss, and these are our people who run our country, and that's
our elected officials.
Our elected officials.
Your tax dollars at work.
Of which Alan Alda is well, he's not.
He's appointed.
He's appointed. He's not elected. So. I don't know what I mean. The point I'm making. The point I'm making is, it's. Not, I think it's beyond the FBI, rogue divisions of the FBI. I think it goes higher than that.
You're probably right.
That's all. That's all I'm saying.
I think we agree.
So the episode wrapped up, and it happened, and you know, I think we'll clearly see more of Madeline Pratt, right? Or will we?
I'd like to. I really like her.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe you know, maybe they'll get and they'll end up together, Madeline and Red, in the end.
That'd be nice.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Sure.
We have that shot of Lizzie at the end there. Tom doesn't answer the phone, mm-hmm. and he's in Orlando. You know, we all know that everything good happens in Orlando. But we have that shot of Lizzie at the end there with doing the sleight of hand trick with the ultrasound picture.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think? Why is that shot in the episode? What is she feeling in that?
Disappear, reappear.
Is that what we're doing?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying what you're reading into that, but I will say that, you know, clearly she's struggling with the decision to keep or not keep the kid. She's been struggling with the decision. She's made a decision. Red said you made the right decision. This is at the center of the turmoil between Tom and Lizzie is what's happening with this baby or what's not happening with this baby. And as she's sitting there, it's kind of like, you know, should I keep the baby? Should I not keep the baby? Should we keep the baby? Should I not keep the baby? And I've already made the decision. That's kind of what she's been, that's maybe what that symbolizes in that moment, in my opinion.
All right.
What do I know?
I'll take it.
But I do know that, again, your boy Wrestler swoops in, and there's a nice moment with him at the end.
Oh, yes, where he ditches his ex-fiance Audrey, who he's obviously back on with, to be there and comfort his newfound friend, Lizzie.
Let me comfort you with my penis.
All right. Relax. It's the family show. I don't know.
Is it really?
Is it?
I don't know if it is. All right. So we get some cool previews from next week, which look like, obviously, shit's about to go down. We're finally going to get into this, which will probably be a multiple episode arc of the Jolene-Lucy situation. And of course, NBC Promo Department, all questions will be answered. The biggest blacklist ever. Or whatever. The war is coming. Yeah, so, you know, I'm in. they get me every time. I don't know. God bless them. Do we have Well, I think that's it. That's
I
all we got.
Some shout-outs if you want them. Yeah. Do it. My iTunes
do some
and YouTube.
Tickety.
Just a couple people. Yeah. I know Nando.
Oh, well, it's the news and gossip. Let's hear that drop.
Oh.
She is paying attention.
Yeah. I'm just checking. Julia.
Is that the tickety-tickety noise? Yes. I'm not Nando. Okay, so on iTunes, we have Twinkie330. That was nice. Running to remake Bobby Carr 88, Zombie Walker 17.
Oh, Zombie Walker.
And then what do we got here on YouTube? We have Bridget Shea Wardstone, Terry Pitnick, Alex Tungate, Sasu 1234567891X1, and a whole bunch of others. Life is Short 214. Yeah, we got some good ones. Thanks, good. Guys.
Thank
Taylor
you for listening.
Taylor S. Oh, we love you too.
Yeah, Taylor. We love you, Taylor. Thanks for listening.
Oh, and Shelly.
Shelly.
Always Shelly.
A vanilla cupcake, which I already talked about.
Yes.
And so thank you all for listening and downloading us. And we're glad to be back. And we're glad to be black. I am, at least. I don't know. List?
Durst? What?
Uh-oh. Oh, well, let's jump into some predictions. And
yeah. Oh.
And now, you're after Buzz.
Julia.
Well, I predicted before that Tom was going to bone, what's her name?
Uh-huh.
What's her name? Jolene.
Jolene.
Lucy.
Yes.
So that's going to happen, we see, or at mm-hmm. least they get pretty darn close. But I think, what's his name? Red is now hot on the tail of Jolene. And I think that when he got the list of the people who said they were dead but really aren't, that's who he was looking for. It was for Lucy Brooks, 28 mm-hmm. years old. So that's happening.
Got
not really a prediction, more of an observation.
Okay.
But that's going to happen.
Got it. Jill San.
I think that maybe, I don't know, man. I'm thinking maybe, I think Tom and Lizzie are done. I mean, that just, you know, it's just that's just a Walking Dead. It's just waiting to fall down. Mm-hmm. And I think that wrestler can't pick up the pieces right away because that's too trite. So we have to wait. There'll have to be somebody in between.
That'll be season two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be season two, right? What are you going to get? Yeah.
Is there a prediction in this?
And no, not really, no.
Okay. Is there a prediction anywhere?
Well, you know, I think that Red knows that Tom's going to bang what's her name, and he's going to find a way to show it to Lizzie.
Well, of course. I think that's going to be a given, and then that'll be the straw that broke the camel's back. But I will say that my prediction is we will obviously get to see what Jolene's up to, what you know, why she's after Tom. But keep in mind, Red has been very, very vocal this entire time about Tom is not who he says he is. And I have no reason to not believe that. So I think that we're finally going to get a Tom reveal. Because I still am on Tom's dirty. I'm still on that. So we're going to have that Tom reveal, whatever that is, where we'll find out Tom's true. You know, whoever Tom is, we'll find out through Jolene or through whatever. And maybe they're in cahoots. Maybe that meeting is like, I don't know. Who knows? I don't know what I'm predicting. But I think we'll find out more about Tom than we will about Lucy next episode.
All right.
That's
my prediction. Well, thanks for joining us on the Blacklist After Buzz After Show. Julia, where can we find you?
Find me on Twitter and on Instagram at Julia Carely, JuliaCarely. Follow me, and also here for a bevy of shows with these gentlemen.
A bunch of others. Joe.
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Filippo, JoeFlipo, and my website is josephsanfilippo.com. Yes. Mr. Braz, where can we find you, sir?
On Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. I'm posting pictures. I posted some just of my hike this morning.
Oh, did you?
Oh,
that's sounds all. Delightful.
I don't know what I'm doing. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next week for more Blacklist After Buzz After Show. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.